You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Friday, the final day of the week. These are the voyages of the program Unsportsmanlike Conduct, its ongoing mission. To explore strange new movies, to seek out new bits and new edifications, to boldly go where no radio program has gone before.
Hellcat's Movie Club. It's Hellcat's Movie Club.
It's time for the Movie Club. Today, as we welcome Kent Wagemann in, we are talking about the mid-90s classic Seven, starring Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman. And Kent, John is gone. He's on vacation. But to my left, I don't know if you can see him on that very small screen there in front of you. Wave your hand, Steve Sipple. It's your former coworker, Steve Sipple.
Hello.
Well, Mr. Sipple.
Wow. Yeah, it's nice to hear your voice. It is.
Yes.
It is.
Haven't seen you for a month or more.
Yeah. As I departed the Journal Star. But yeah, nice to see you, Kent. Mm-hmm. I trust you're doing well.
I am. At least I'm still employed. Let's put it that way.
It's all you can ask for in 2022.
Oh, I was telling Josh, he can find jobs anywhere.
Yeah, he says it's easy to find jobs these days.
We're
Kent.
In a banana republic.
Yeah, it's a banana republic. He was having a blast in the crossover today.
Al Kent, let's just talk about movies.
All right, let's just get to movies. Stick to movies, we say. All right, Kent, today we are, as we mentioned, we are reviewing Seven. Nick picked this movie last week. He had never seen this movie. He didn't know the plot of Seven, but I imagine that some of the memes have probably worked their way too through to you, Nick. Tell us what Seven is about.
Seven is about an old grizzled cop on the verge of retirement,
yeah,
and a young buck coming in, getting transferred to hunt down the serial killer that bases their killings off of the seven deadly sins.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's called Seven.
Easy,
but also there's 7 days.
Easy to describe. Easy to describe. Nice and succinct in your description there.
Succinct.
I mean, feel free, Nick. How do you want to start this conversation?
So my introduction to this movie was the "what's in the box" meme, because I grew up on Reddit and people would quote that constantly. And then I think there was one day a few years ago where I saw a video clip from it, because I never knew what movie it was from. I just knew the meme.
The "what's in the box"?
Yeah. And then I didn't have the full context of the movie, so luckily that wasn't ruined for me, but I was kind of able to piece things together as we went.
Sure.
But then I'm glad I didn't figure out what was in the box, because I knew what was in the box, but not
who
was in the box.
And I think it's okay to spoil this, right, Kent? This movie came out in 1995.
Well, it's 20, or it's 30,
yeah,
almost 30 years old.
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
like 28 years old or something, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it came out in 95. So yeah, feel free to spoil it.
Okay,
yeah.
So I knew that there was a head in the box at some point, but I didn't know it was his wife, which sucked. Like, I saw that and I'm like, oh. And then it was a really good end. I liked a lot how it ended.
Great ending.
Because it was really depressing.
Yep.
It didn't end on a high note. And then I loved Morgan Freeman's quote.
Which was?
crap, what was that exactly?
The movie ends with the line, "The world is a good place and worth fighting for."
And he's like, "I agree with the last part."
I agree
and
with the second
credits.
Part. Yeah,
it
that's
was so good.
Say it again.
"The world is a good place and worth fighting for." I agree with the second part.
It was just a very powerful movie. Then, obviously, coming across the crime scenes were horrific.
Yep.
Rough.
Oh, yeah. Pretty rough. But otherwise, I liked it. I thought it was interesting. They were talking. Thank you, Sip. When they were hauling Kevin Spacey out, the baddie, mm-hmm. to the desert area.
Mm-hmm.
And he started talking and he's like starting to kind of like not make sense. Like,
wow.
I agree with it, but make sense. Like, I see his perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I do like that when you have like a bad guy, but they explain their perspective to you. Like, I can see what you're doing. It's not good, but I can see what you're doing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I liked it. I slept fine after, so I don't know what that says about me.
When they had the screening of this, which is back in the old days when we had this little 20-seat screening room, or maybe we saw this in a theater before the movie opened,
okay.
But I think it was still in the screening room. And there was a woman who ran the little movie theater in Seward,
okay.
that would come to the screenings once in a while. And she came thinking she was going to get cuddly little Morgan Freeman movie.
Hello.
And she got this. She walked.
Did she walk out?
Do you remember what part it was that she left?
Yeah, right at.
Sloth?
What's
Sloth
that?
Sloth? That. The guy in the bed?
Yes.
Yeah, I figured. Yep. That's the part, man.
That's a tough hang.
And she just got up and walked out. And, you know, these are movie. Those are, you know, people. We saw hundreds of movies, right?
Uh-huh.
And you never, I mean, even if they were garbage, you'd sit through them, you know. But she couldn't take it. I mean, this thing was pretty rough.
Oh, yeah.
And for its time, really graphic in a way. You know, I mean, I guess there are two things that I always think about with this movie. One, it's David Fincher's first movie.
Okay.
Second he movie, right in, after Alien 3?
Well, first movie that he
didn't
step in and...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this is the first movie he brought, let's put it that way. And it's certainly the one that introduced him mm-hmm. to the world. And, you know... He came from the music video world and then he made that awful Alien movie and you thought, oh, this isn't going to be much. And bang, it was like, okay, this guy is good. And if you look at what he's gone on to do, you know, look at the list of really good movies he's made. And not all of them have been in this sort of style, even to the point of what was it? 2 years ago, he made that movie Mank mm-hmm. about Herman Mankiewicz, the screenwriter of Citizen Kane, that was all shot in black and white and everything. And this is what I would call your kind of auspicious debut for him.
Okay.
Secondly, I think this movie also kind of set a tone for 10 years worth of these kind of movies.
Okay.
Made it a lit because it was so dark.
Like what else?
Right.
What else was like this?
What else? I think in a odd way, you could almost go with like the slasher, like not slash, but your Saw kind of movies,
mm-hmm,
your
mm-hmm.
that are more gory and
Texas
dark.
Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, any of those. It kind of almost gave them permission to be that gory.
Sure.
Yeah. So this thing was a massive hit.
Yeah,
don't
it was.
Forget that.
It was.
This was like, I don't know, probably a $40 million budget that made like $300 million. So, of course, when they do that, they're going to go, yeah, go ahead and make something like this. And, you know, I think it made my top 10. I went back and looked. It made the bottom of my top 10 that year.
Okay.
Like number 9 or 10.
I'm not surprised. El, can't you know? You might not. Josh knows. I'm not a real big movie buff, but I saw that in the theater, and it was very impacting to me. I still sort of remember scenes from it from that long ago.
And is that the only time you've ever seen it?
Yeah. To see it on the big screen, and then you've seen so many movies, and I bet you're like me, like so many movies, so many games. There's literally movies and games that I don't remember being at that I was at.
Oh, yeah.
This
absolutely.
There's literally games I was at that I don't remember anything about. I don't even remember being there. But this movie, I always will remember being there.
Because it sticks with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same with me. There are probably thousands of movies I don't remember at all.
Yeah.
It's passed through. This one doesn't pass through.
If I look them up and look at the title and the who's in it and whatever and go, oh, yeah. But off the top of my head, no. There are literally hundreds, I'm sure, of Nebraska basketball games that not only do I not remember, there are a lot that I remember I'd like to forget.
Ken, a few things that stand out to me with this movie. The first is, and I didn't realize this until right now, I knew that the ending, there were like two endings. The studio did not want this to be the ending. They wanted it to be a more traditional ending, and David Fincher fought for this ending, but apparently they accidentally mailed him the original screenplay with the head in the box ending, which is phenomenal, and he fought for it. And I think that it is obviously the right decision. I remember that, Kent, the first time I watched it, I would have been probably 16, 17 years old.
Oh, boy.
Influential
age.
And I was like, wow, it was good. I knew the movie was good, but I didn't know how I felt about the ending. And of course, as I've gotten older, it's like the only way this movie can end. As John Doe talks about, people are going to remember this. People are going to remember what is going to happen. And he tells that specifically to Brad Pitt. And so, of course, that ending sticks with me. The other thing that I thought about a lot as I watch it, I love how it's modern, but it's like not too modern. Now, of course, it was set in the 90s, but you watch this, like there is technology, there are vehicles, but for the most part, like it's just kind of a time and a place. You don't know where it is. It rains all the time.
It's an ambiguous city.
Yeah, it's a nondescript city.
They don't name the city.
Yeah,
they deliberately don't.
I love that about it. And I think, Kent, we've watched a few movies in the movie club. You know, the one that I will always remember is Apocalypse Now, where, I mean, that movie, it came out in the 80s, and I thought, wow, this movie looks very, very modern. I always feel that when I watch Seven, too. Yeah. It just looks like a modern movie. I feel like this movie could have been made yesterday. And outside of the actors and knowing what age they actually are, I think it would fit into 2022. It looks great. It sounds great. It feels great.
That was one of the things when I watched it the other night that I specifically was watching for was, does this feel dated because of the, technology and all of that? And does it feel dated stylistically? Like it felt like it didn't resonate now because of the way. And in neither case, it feels like there's a period element to it because it doesn't, they're not on their cell phone,
mm-hmm.
right?
Sure.
So that part is not there. But the rest of it, as you say, it feels like it could be come out next week and be a hit,
Yep.
And part of that, I think, is also goes to both the editing, which got Oscar nominated, the cinematography, and those performances are exquisite. Yeah. Morgan Freeman, that was a part that, you think about it now, of the people that were in that age group in the 90s, who else would you have cast that could have done that?
Nobody.
I mean, that was a perfect role for the guy. And then this was kind of one of the roles that made Brad Pitt, right? I mean,
yeah.
You this one, and then a few years later, he did Fight Club with Fincher. Again,
oh boy,
those two things I think are really two of the movies that really made him more than just the pretty boy,
Mm-hmm. Absolutely,
one of my
and Kevin Spacey before all the stuff came out, right? Before mm-hmm. he was sort of disgraced. If you think about this, I thought he was very good in this, in the way that. He made the guy as Nick was saying, he made the guy almost human in a way, mm-hmm. right? Rather than just a cardboard villain. And yet he was still reprehensible even when he did that. That's a good trick. And, you have that, and then you have the usual suspects. to another great performance. So you had three really good actors that really carried this movie. And, you know, and like I say, the other thing that struck me was just how gory it was for the time. Mm-hmm. You know, today we wouldn't have that much, that same reaction, I don't think.
And real quick, Nick, before you talk too, Kent, gory, but we never actually, outside of the last killing, we don't see any of the acts themselves. So you have
Correct.
To, you really have to use your mm-hmm. imagination. And then, like, that's why, like, when
well, it
when
forces
Spacey,
you to use your
yeah,
imagination.
Yeah, when he shows up at the end and he's just and he's yelling, "Detective!" And he's just covered in blood. It's like, uh-huh. Oh, God. You know, what in the world is this guy up to? Yeah.
I really like the visual storytelling a lot in this movie, too. Like, when they went to go hang out with Sloth Guy and the all the
hang
air,
out.
All the air fresheners were on the ceiling.
Disturbing.
Yeah,
it was disturbing. But all the air fresheners, it made me think, oh, maybe those were placed there to mask the smell because this dude is alive.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But he's in an apartment with other people, surely.
Yep.
So he covered the smell. But, like, mm-hmm. they never say that, but there's so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
God.
Sloth was insane.
That's, yeah, I mean, yep. that one and what happened to the prostitute, man, like, those are the two that it's mm-hmm. just like, oh, boy. I mean, all of them are pretty nasty, but those two in particular.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And actually, when I watched this again, I thought, and I do this sometimes, it's like, who thinks of this stuff?
Yeah.
Right? What's going on in your mind, Mr. Screenwriter, to come up with this, you know?
There's brilliance.
I mean, yikes.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
You know? And what you said about not showing the actual acts, that's a Hitchcockian technique. And it makes it more disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
full agree.
Because you substituted your imagination, whether you want to or not, what you think happened. Yeah. Right?
Right.
And so that says, okay, I got that inside me too. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
We all do.
So that's seven. Kent, do we have anything more on this? Have you ever talked to Fincher? Just a fascinating person.
I have not. I wish I could. He's one of my favorite directors.
Same. Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's made a couple that I've thought were like, ugh. Like that Gone Girl I did not think was a
You
very
didn't
good
like
movie.
Gone Girl?
Oh, I love Gone Girl.
Oh, it's so good.
Social and Network is one of my favorites ever.
Drop the.
What's that?
Social Network. It's one of my, that's yeah. one of my favorite
oh, yeah,
movies
yeah,
of
yeah.
all time. Yeah.
I forget that he did that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
How much time
and
we got with
I
him?
I really yeah. even like I say, Mank was maybe one or two on of the year it came out.
Yeah, so, I like Mank as well.
Yep. So yeah, no, this is I wouldn't go so far as to use the word classic, but of its genre, it's as good as it gets.
Mm-hmm. All right, I want to verge away from something here. Did you? L. Kent Wolgamott joins us from the Lincoln Journal Star, longtime entertainment writer, knows a lot of people. You're friends with Willie Nelson. Did you happen to slip over to the Bourbon Theater last week to see Steve Earle by any chance?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, you and did. Then, oh, you then, did. Ah! How was then, that? How was
it
that?
It was great. And then I spent a couple hours on the bus with him after the
no,
show.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't.
Absolutely, I
oh,
did.
Oh, Kent, why didn't you? You should have called. Well, you don't know I love Steve Earle, but I drove by on the Hog, and I was close to going in. I had a kitchen pass from Trixie. I had $45. I mean, I could have easily went in.
You should have come in, brother.
Ah, brother.
Next time Steve comes by, we'll go.
Okay, I'm serious now. I'm serious. I hope we're both alive.
I love how.
Yeah. This the single.
We're all three alive.
Yes. Most ridiculous thing that happened that night, from my point of view,
okay.
is he's talking. Towards the end of the show about, well, I drove into town and we rolled in and I saw the first place I played here in Memorial Stadium and Farm Aid and blah, blah, blah. And I was, the way they had it set up, it was tables pretty much all the way back from the edge of the floor. Where I usually stand, I had to stand closer so he could see me, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I shook my head and I said, no, you played here two times before Farm Aid.
Oh, is that right?
And he looked at me and I said, you played, And he said, I might have played a drumstick, but I didn't play that other place, Little Bows. And I said, oh, yes, you did. He pointed at me. So he went to different shows than I did.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. That's, and I'd forgotten he had he played Farm Aid.
Yep.
I forgot about that.
Yes, he played Farm Aid.
Yeah.
And he played, he started, first time he played Lincoln was at Little Bows, right, when that first record came out. But, and then one of the times he came through, I don't know why I'm telling Steve Earle stories.
Because he's a great artist. He's one of the best.
One of the times he came through, he was staying at the what used to be the Hilton downtown.
Uh-huh.
And I went up to the room and he's like, I got a new song I want you to hear. And he pulled out the mandolin and played Copperhead Road.
Oh, hello. Hello. Okay, so Steve Earle.
And he told me I was one of the first handful of people to ever hear that song.
God, I'm glad I asked you about this. Now, did he play Guitar Town at Bourbon?
Absolutely.
Oh, God, I missed it.
Why didn't you go?
Guitar Town someday.
Terrible about stuff like that.
Sad.
Keep going, Kent. Keep going. Someday. Did he play When the Rain Comes Down, When the Rain Came Down? Rain Came Down? Uh-oh. Did we lose out?
Kent, did we lose you? Oh, no.
No.
No, there you are.
Hello. I'm still here.
Yeah, you froze a little bit.
I'm still here.
All right, good. Hello. All right, good.
Oh, he did not play When the Rain Came Down, but it was a really good – what the show was heavy on at the start is, you know, he did a tribute record for Jerry Jeff Walker.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, it's his
like
album.
Like he did one with for Towns Van Zandt and one for Guy Clark. And so he opened with a handful of Jeff songs, including a great version of Mr. Bojangles.
Nice. How was the crowd, L? How was the crowd?
Pretty good. It's hard to tell when it's all tables like that, but it was good.
Okay. Thank you for that rundown.
Before we let you go, Kent, and by the way, The Gray Man is the movie next week. It's on Netflix. It's like 2 hours. I mean, you won't be here, so you don't have to watch it. But Gray Man is available on Netflix. A couple responses to our discussion. The first one is from Jerry. He says, seriously, can Kent tweet out or post his list of top 10 movies for the last, like, 30 years or however far back he wants to go? Now, Kent, I know it's a lot of legwork. I genuinely would be interested to see your old top 10 list as well. I think that'd
like,
be
put it
fun.
On a blog or something.
Yeah, that'd be pretty fun content.
What I did do when our Ground Zero publication turned 20, like 4 years ago, I did like the top five from each year, I believe.
Oh, okay.
In that. So I can certainly, that's easy enough to find. That I can do.
Perfect. Another one, Severe tuning in. He says that he bought the DVD of Seven looking for the extras. He says the only other time that he did that was Memento. So one of those movies where he wanted to watch and find out as much stuff as possible. And then finally, we got this email this morning in the Equitable Bank inbox from Anthony. He says, Josh, ever since the movie club premiered, I've been hoping for Seven to be selected my favorite movie. You should dedicate a whole hour to it. Maybe some special guests. Shame John won't be there. Unfortunately, I think the Kevin Spacey situation may bring down the excitement for the discussion. I know he only appears at the very end. It maybe can lead to some discussions about separating art from artist and if it is even possible. And then he adds, Kent, hopefully Midsommar is selected soon, which I went and looked up to see. Yeah, that movie, you want to talk about some messed up stuff. Midsommar, I enjoyed it immensely, but it is certainly not for everybody.
Oh, my.
I've heard good things about
it. It's really good. Florence Pugh
is
awesome.
It's good, but it's kind of weird and disturbing all at the same time.
Good way to describe it. Good way to describe
you,
it.
Josh.
roasted. Kent, that was fun, man. I love this movie. It is one of my favorites. It was really fun to talk about it with you. I'm so sad that you haven't had a chance to talk to Fincher. I hope that the next time he releases a movie that you get to do so. He just seems like one of those guys, though, that just doesn't do that type of stuff.
Yeah, that would be my guess, is he doesn't. I've never heard of him going on a press junket or anything like that.
Yeah.
So he might talk to, like, the New York Times or somebody, but that would be probably it.
Yeah, indeed. All right, The Gray Man coming up next week, Seven. And if you want to watch it, if you haven't seen it yet, it's available for you today on Netflix. Kent, thank you so much. We will chat in a week, tomorrow or next week. Last time we talked to you before a Saturday without football for a while, so it's here.
Yes, it's here, and Are you going to Ireland, Mr. Sybil?
Yes, I'm headed to Dublin on August 22nd, Al. Are you headed over?
No, I'm not. Can you imagine?
Well, I can
imagine. You used to work there. They're not going to send me.
Yeah, I'm going to a place where Thin Lizzy originated.
Oh, great.
Dublin.
Perfect.
Yeah, and you too,
yeah,
obviously.
There's a Phil Lynott statue there somewhere.
Hello? A Phil?
There's this.
Hello.
Phil Lynott, the singer.
The singer.
For Thin Lizzy. All right.
Yeah.
Really?
There's
a Dublin native.
Him in Dublin.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I shouldn't say he's a Dublin native because I think he's originally from England, but he grew up in Dublin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were
Thank
great.
You. Yeah.
That's a great band.
Incredible band.
Well, you have a lovely time, and we'll see you in the press box the next week.
One of
the fine season opening games against. Is that the mighty North Dakota?
That's North Dakota in week one.
Yeah. We'll talk more about Steve Earle in the press box, okay?
There we go.
Okay, Kent.
All right, Kent, thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week.
See ya.
All right, Kent Wongamott joining us here on Unsportsmanlike Conduct. When we return, we got a couple of bingos in there.
Did
we? A couple of marks. And
did we get a couple?
Yeah, and depending on the sheet that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Someone might have just won a foursome to Miracle Hill Golf and Tennis next week.
Oh, sheet.
Yeah, indeed. We'll see we'll see about that. One tweet, though, before we go to break from Brian. He says, glad you guys – oh, wait, no, not that one. It's 7 is very disturbing, but glutton is just a normal night before race day. Oh, yeah, got to get your pasta.
Got a carbo load.
That guy definitely ate a lot of pasta.
He did.
He passed out.
Plus nice. a text message into the text machine about our stock up, stock down.
Okay.
So we'll get to that when we return.
We got things to talk about.
We got things to talk about. Focus, Sipple. Focus.
And energy, Josh. Energy.
It's One Beer Friday. We continue next here on 1620 The Zone. Hey, everyone. Josh Peterson here for Miracle Hill Golf and Tennis. Speaking of Golf Flash, let me go to the page right now. Let me refresh how many spots are available. And there are 4 foursomes available right now at miraclehillgolf.com/store. I've been telling you all week long, you know, this is the week. This is the week. It usually is about to sell out. And sure enough, it is about to sell out. Go get signed up. You do not want to miss it. 1 week from today, it'll be a One Beer Friday. Have you seen the weather for Golf Flash? This is the 5th time we've doing this thing. And I don't know if we have ever had a day that could be as good as this one, at least the extended forecast. Mid-80s, comfortable, sunny. We're going to have a blast out at the golf course. You need to be there. MiracleHillGolf.com/store. Get signed up today. Give them a call as well at 402-498-0220. And book your tee time for the weekend and beyond. They're located just north of Dodge on 120th Street. Miracle Hill Golf and Tennis.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.